literature on perversion or so-called sexual deviance has often othered people who were interested in this stuff and spoken about it as a sort of medical or psychological condition. And I wrote a book that proposed, in fact, every single one of us has some involvement in these things. And I think that it's a misnomer to pretend, oh, that's what the pervert down the road does, as opposed to me who has a squeaky clean sexual fantasy life. I don't think that's actually true for anyone.
For anyone?
No.
The hookup. Love and f***ing. On Triple J.
Warning, sex and adult themes.
Hey, Sarah McVee with you, and I have to warn you, this podcast discusses rape, the real thing, and also people's fantasies about it. If you want to talk to someone at any point about any issues that are raised for you during this podcast, you can call 1-800-RESPECT. Punch this number into your phone right now, 1-800-737-732. On this episode, you'll hear from dominatrix Mistress Tokyo about navigating consent when you're acting out your fantasies. Dr. Lauren Rosewarne on her book Part-Time Perverts. She reckons we're all perverts in one way or another. And you'll hear from sex therapist Tanya Cohens. She tells you how often her clients bring up rape fantasies and what to do if the fantasies you're having are upsetting or distressing you in any way. First, though, one anonymous listener, who we'll call Beck, opens up about what it's like to fantasize about rape.
I'd have to say a few years ago, I watched a movie where there was quite a brutal rape scene in the movie. I'd never seen anything like it. It was very realistic, and I really got off on it. And I found myself, you know, continuously going back to that scene at different stages. It developed into quite a lot of fantasies around being in that situation myself.
What was it like to first be turned on by such a brutal scene?
I do recall how strongly intriguing it was for me, the realization that that brutality excited me was sort of, you know, it was a moment where I sort of looked at myself, but there was no negative thoughts, you know. I didn't feel ashamed. I was more focused on the excitement involved.
Had you had a kind of history of being turned on by things that were violent before?
I've always really been into very violent movies. Watching movies where the scenes are really brutal has always intrigued me. I'd just never seen anything like that. That one particular scene where the actress got so brutally raped. I mean, I've never seen anything like that after. You know, it's definitely something that's always stood out for me. But for me, watching movies, my favorite are always the most brutal.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I have a strong interest in watching people being tortured. I don't know why.
Can you try to describe to me what it feels like to be turned on by the fantasy of someone raping you?
That loss of control, being the one that is being raped, and then also that taking advantage of someone that's lost control. You know, I have strong feelings about being intoxicated, and being intoxicated to that point where you can be really vulnerable to other people. You know, I've never actually sat down and tried to analyze any of this.
Please feel free not to answer this if you don't want to, but have you ever been sexually assaulted?
I've been in situations where I could have been, and I somehow got myself out of those situations. I've been through, as a child, sexual experiences where, as an adult, I see it as having gone through sexual abuse. I do have family members that's been raped. One's very, very close to me. You know, I grew up in a country where being raped was something to be expected at some point in your life. And I don't know if all these facts add up to why it excites me. I have no idea.
When you first felt turned on by rape fantasies. You said that that didn't bring any shame. Did you find it hard to bring it up with partners?
I haven't felt it necessary to speak to anyone about it. Just because I also know that people won't necessarily be open to that sort of conversation or that sort of way of thinking. I've shared it with my current partner, and he's reacted quite well to it. You know, he's accepted it as a part of who I am, and that's just, you know, what goes on in my head. It's a bit twisted. And I've been very comfortable sharing that with him. But I've never really felt the need to share that with anyone else.
Is it something that you like to play out, or something that you just prefer to think about?
Playing out, sure. I mean, you know, sometimes I wish he'd be a bit more rough with me.
How do you reconcile between your fantasies about rape and yet the trauma that someone that you love has been through as a result of rape?
You know, I've always had a great sadness for her, that she has gone through that experience and that it has traumatized her so much, and it had a huge effect on her life. And I have a lot of empathy for her, but not one moment have I ever felt like ashamed of having those ideas for myself.
So you separate the way that someone else experiences rape,
yeah,
to the way that you experience rape.
Yeah, I separate myself from that because that you know, everybody experiences things in different ways, and I think that maybe most women are fearful of the situation, more fearful than to maybe to the point where they can't even like fathom the idea of it, you know. So I know that that's a little bit different, but you know, my way of thinking with this particular topic is a little bit different. And so therefore I separate myself from the next person, because we all, you know, are affected in different ways by different situations.
The Hookup on Triple J.
That was Beck, and that's not her real name, talking about fantasizing about rape after seeing a scene in a movie some years ago. With us is Tanya Cohns. She's a sex therapist and a very good friend of the show. Tanya, thanks for being here. How common do you think Beck's fantasy is?
I think it's quite common. I come across it in the work that I do. People have it and they have all kinds of feelings about it. Sometimes they feel bad, like it's wrong to have fantasies. And we sort of talk about it because I've never come across a woman who would actually like to be raped. It's the fantasy of it that's working for them and turning them on in their head. And it could hook into things like their core erotic themes. A lot of us have themes around things that are taboo, and things, definitely things like rape are, you know, not okay in generally society.
What do you say to women who are struggling with that being a fantasy that turns them on?
I ask them a little bit about it. I usually give people permission to have whatever fantasy works for them, because it's a fantasy, just that. It doesn't mean because we're thinking about it or it turns us on that we have to act on it. And that's very important. A lot of people start thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, I've been thinking about someone of the opposite sex. Do I need to go and do something about that? I've been thinking about rape fantasies. Does this make me sick in the head? No, it doesn't. I think a lot of people have fantasies, and they're just that. They don't want to act on them. They don't need to act on them, but they're really going to turn them on when they're thinking about it in a sexual way. And some people do like to act on them.
In a consensual way.
Right.
T-Dog, yeah, from the Goldie says, wow, this is crazy. Most people's worst fear is this chick's fantasy. I feel sorry for the people who've been through such hell having to listen to this lady glorifying it, and they absolutely don't have to listen. We have given a really strong warning on this because we do know that it's such a sensitive topic to be talking about. Someone else says on the text line, I often have rape fantasies, and the thought of a random being rough, pushing me against the wall and having intercourse with me really turns me on, and I'm ashamed to voice this. I'm aware of the disgusting act that rape is and completely agree with the illegality of it. This is just a fantasy and I would never wish it on anyone. And they say that's from Anonymous. And obviously it is something that people feel really, really uncomfortable talking about. How do you help women come to terms, or people come to terms with that, other than just saying, you know, this is a fantasy? Like, do you get into why that's a fantasy for some people?
I do talk to people about their core erotic themes. So we want to look at what works for them and what turns them on, if it's relevant. But if it's just them saying, I have these thoughts and I'm really ashamed of them, so I can then relate it to their themes and help normalise it a little bit. Some people have fantasies and they want to act them out and then they feel bad about that and then they come to me maybe to talk a bit about that, or how can they do something like that safely? Because there is a community where people want to do that sort of stuff, and there's a lot to be thought about if you want to do that.
Beck, in the interview that we just heard, talked about abuse. She said she's got a history of what she now characterises as child abuse. She's been in abusive relationships. Mm. In your experience, is there a link between real abuse and these kinds of violent fantasies? Can fantasies sometimes be a result of that?
It really depends on the human. Like there are so many different ways of recovering from and getting over abuse. Some people can become sexually promiscuous to sort of take the power back over their sexuality. Some people might have fantasies like this. It really, really depends. I have spoken to quite a few people over the years who have fantasies that actually play out abuse that happened to them when they were younger, but it's not a given. So it's important to treat each and every case as it is and talk to the person about what is okay for them and what sense they're making of it.
We got an email from another anonymous listener who said, it's a young gay guy who grew up in the country. He says, I consider myself a compassionate person, and so it's been a real struggle for me to feel okay that rape fantasies turn me on. I've had negative experiences sharing this with partners in the past, and I've been made to feel ashamed about this part of my sexual life. After these moments, I've been left wondering what kind of person is turned on by fantasies about rape. And he went on to talk about finding the BDSM community and finding other people into fantasies that can't be truly realised in reality. And he says that helped him see his own kinks in a different way. And he also said that positive experiences have helped me to let go of shame and fear and given me space to explore my fantasies in a safe and healthy way. I feel and talks about, you know, playing with a guy where he creates a situation that's impossible in reality. And says the big difference between playing it out and an actual sexual assault is that sexual assault is non-consensual, and he's meeting from a place of mutual respect. When he's role-playing, he's willing to give up control, and that's his decision. And he feels safe in the limits which he has defined. Tanya, if someone's having these thoughts but they don't have the community that this anonymous emailer has, what advice would you give them?
Okay. One, if they're nervous, they can come and see somebody like me, a sex therapist, and sort of talk it out and get some of it normalised and get some tips and techniques. Not everybody's going to give them tips and techniques, I think, as well. My advice is if you want to act on a rape fantasy, never, ever do it without consent. It's against the law. So what your email person has said is true. You've got to negotiate the scene and you've got to have consent. So if you're going to do something like this, there are things that you need to work out, right? And this is part of the negotiation. Things like what's going to be entailed in this scene that we're going to play out. What are the boundaries? What is okay and what's not okay? What are the parameters of the play? For example, when is it going to start and when is it going to stop? Are we going to do it just now and do a role play, or is it going to happen sometime in the next 24 hours? Will others be involved? If so, they need to be briefed. What if there are going to be witnesses? Do they need to be cued in? Things like safe words, things like the safety at the scene. So if there's going to be bondage or restriction, have shears nearby. Think about safer sex. Think about marks on the body, and then importantly, think about debriefing afterwards, because even though it seems like a good idea, it can be quite distressing to play things like that out. So people can come off on quite a high or be quite freaked out, and then they need to talk about what they've gone through and make sense of it.
And we are going to get deeper into that later with Mistress Tokyo, who's a dominatrix, coming up a little bit later. Chanel from Adelaide's called in. You had a rape fantasy, Chanel.
Yeah, I used to, but then I
came across this movie, which was an Australian film called The Little Death. And in that is a bunch of different fantasies played out by the actors. And one of the women in it actually had a rape fantasy. And her boyfriend went to extraordinary lengths to make that rape fantasy happen for her. And she was so frightened by the non-consensual nature of what she thought was happening that she then basically knocked him out by accident because she was trying to get away from her rapist.
So I saw that film, yes.
Did that change your view on your fantasy or did it stop?
Yeah, it really did because I realised that what I thought was a rape fantasy was actually just more of a primal caveman type fantasy because as soon as the consent was taken away, it was no longer, like, fun.
Mm. Thank you so much for sharing that, Chanel.
That's right.
On the text line, someone says, Tanya, this one's for you. I have a long history of sexual abuse and being raped. I sometimes have thoughts and wishes of it happening again, but it makes me physically ill. I don't understand why I want to be raped again. And Tanya, just before you do respond to that, I just want to let that listener know that if they ever need to, they can call 1-800-RESPECT and talk that out with a really qualified, experienced professional. But Tanya, I'd also love your response to that.
It's a really tricky thought to navigate. Sometimes people, when they've been in abusive situations, have found that their bodies may respond in pleasurable ways, even though their head's saying, this is not okay, no, I don't want to have this happen. They may be trying to make sense of it afterwards. Sometimes people, if they're in a situation that's non-consensual, try and make it work so that it's, they're trying to, get it right in their head because something's happening that shouldn't be happening.
I guess the big thing with that is to really encourage that listener or anyone that's really struggling with a history of sexual assault or abuse to go and speak to someone about it. There is really amazing free help available. And if you're feeling distressed now, you can call someone right now, 1-800-RESPECT. Tanya, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me, Sarah.
With us is Dr. Lauren Rosewarne. She's a senior lecturer in the School of Social and Political Sciences at the University of Melbourne, and she's the author of a book called Part-Time Perverts. Thanks for being here, Lauren.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
You wrote a whole book about what you describe as perversions. What are some of the fantasies that came across?
I wrote about everything. I wrote about the bug chasing, the rape fantasies, people who have special interests in balloons or bugs, actual bugs, not a bug as a euphemism for disease, but sort of creepy crawlies, you name it, clowns. Yeah, I wrote about the spectrum.
And what did you learn about the reasons behind these fantasies? Are there common themes or different kind of psychological differences between each one?
Well, I guess that's what made my book different to what had already been published on this topic previously. I'm not a psychologist. I'm a social scientist. So I didn't approach this as a sort of pathologizing or sort of why do we have these fantasies, but more so I looked at the topic in terms of operating from the assumption that we're all perverts in different degrees of enthusiasm and we work out ways to participate in these fantasies in a range of different ways, and we're all doing it. And I think historically, literature on perversion or so-called sexual deviance has often othered people who are interested in this stuff and spoken about it as a sort of medical or psychological condition. And I wrote a book that proposed, in fact, every single one of us has some involvement in these things. And I think that it's a misnomer to pretend, oh, that's what the pervert down the road does, as opposed to me who has a squeaky clean sexual fantasy life. I don't think that's actually true for anyone.
For anyone?
Yeah.
Come on. No one.
I really feel everyone to a certain degree. Now, that said, I think some participation is very mild. I think, for example, I'll use my grandmother as an example where she'll talk, she mentioned...
Oh, I bet she'd love that.
Yeah, she'll love it. She's turning 88 this week. She mentioned once about she'd saw Basic Instinct on television and she said it was so horrible I couldn't turn it off. Now, this idea of just being an audience to something that's titillating, I think is a very mild example of getting wanting some sort of pleasure. You don't have to be self-stimulating, but some sort of pleasure from risque sexual material. Who hasn't enjoyed looking at a sexy photograph? Now, that doesn't have to even be a pornographic photo. It just has to be something that's vaguely sexy. That's voyeurism. Call it whatever you like. Gussy it up to say, oh, I just like looking at nice paintings. It's voyeurism. And I think there's a very large spectrum of ways that we engage with this stuff. But I don't think there's anyone who's got the lily white clean approach to this stuff. We've all got an interest in the taboo and in this and the sexually a little deviant.
On Facebook, one of you who would like to stay anonymous, as is the theme tonight, says, I enjoy urethral sounding. I used to do it very regularly and was beginning to stretch my urethra. Now, if you don't know what urethral sounding is, it's sticking a metal rod into your penis to dilate the urethra. Lauren, I'm just wondering, when you looked at the range of kinks, how did you determine, or let's say perversions, how did you determine what perversion means?
Yeah, so I was looking at consensus in terms of literature around what constitutes normal or vanilla sex. And I think there seems to be an agreed upon definition that normal sex is between a committed couple, that they haven't paid for it, that there's no toys, that it's largely done for love, that everyone's age appropriate, that boundaries aren't being crossed, that it's the kind of very vanilla, generally missionary position, love making, basically. It's the no frills, no costumes, no role play. It's the I love you so much that I'm going to make love to you on this soft bed and that's it. And therefore, everything that exists outside of that is considered to be a little bit deviant or a little bit wrong, even if the majority of people have done something that at one time in history has been considered to be a little bit deviant or wrong. And I think that's an important point, that things that we consider taboo now haven't always been the case. Equally, things that we consider perfectly normal now, once upon a time, had a great deal of taboo or deviance attached. Remember, it was only up until 1975 that homosexuality was considered to be a mental illness in books on perversion and on sexual deviance. This isn't stable. This category of what we consider to be perverse isn't a fixed category. It changes over time.
Yeah, I mean, do you reckon there, how many taboos do you reckon there are even left?
Yeah, so there's an I think there's a decreasing number of taboos, particularly as you see more and more things on cable television. That helps to take away some of the stigma around this stuff. I think as much as we sort of have a bit of a cringe factor around 50 Shades of Grey, it really moved into the mainstream BDSM. And I think you've seen that with a whole lot of sexual practices. Heterosexual anal sex is a good example, that once upon a time there was a great deal of taboo attached. That's no longer there. If I was to say what remains taboo today, I think that they're practices that are associated with illegality. So I would say pedophilia, incest, bestiality, these are things that remain illegal, and therefore there's a taboo attached that's tied to the lack of permissibility in our culture.
Liz from the Northern Rivers has called in. Liz, you've got a fetish that could be dangerous.
Yeah, I have a pregnancy fetish, so I like the feeling of unprotective sex with men other than my sole partner in my relationship.
Right. So you like the idea that you could get pregnant?
Yes.
Are you actually wanting to have a baby?
Not at this present moment, no.
So what would you do if you did get pregnant to one of these guys?
We haven't really discussed it, but we'd probably discuss it if it happened at the time. We're not sure at the moment.
Do you use contraception and just imagine it, or is it all in?
It's just all in, no contraceptive.
Right. And what is it about wanting to get pregnant to a stranger that turns you on?
It's a bit of the risk of having sex with other men and the possibility of falling pregnant, just the adrenaline rush, and also the feeling of being able to feel them inside me and the feeling of them ejaculating into me.
But it's also the idea of the pregnancy. It's not just that you like bareback sex.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, interesting. Liz, thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's all right.
We're talking about fantasies that are based on things that are dangerous or risky or taboo. And with you is Dr. Lauren Rosewarn and also Mistress Tokyo, a dominatrix from Sydney. Thanks for being here.
No, thank you so much for having me back.
Also with us is Anna from Townsville. Anna, thanks for calling in.
Hi, everyone.
You've been listening along to the discussion about rape fantasies. Is that something that you identify with?
Yes, I do. It's something that I do as part of my kink community.
And how does that play out for you?
So my partner and I, we both like the rape fantasies, and so we do this stuff that's like consensual non-consent, where we talk about the stuff that we like to do, and then we do it a little bit later.
Have you ever wondered why you're into it?
I have a little bit. As a person, I kind of just looked at stuff that turned me on, like going onto the internet and you have kink.com and stuff like that, and it's all really exciting. And so I just kind of went and talked to my partner, and we both decided that we liked that kind of stuff.
And what would you say is the fundamental difference between a rape fantasy or acting out consensual non-consent with your partner and what it's based on, rape?
It's a huge difference. So it would be the difference between riding a motorbike with helmet on and riding a motorbike without a helmet on. When you're riding the motorbike with the helmet on, you're thinking about your safety and you're making sure that everything is going to be safe, even though that there is that element of danger and real risk. But without the helmet on, the real risk becomes life-threatening beyond a point.
I guess just I'd add to that as well that that would be a choice to wear a helmet, and there's no choice in rape. But while you were talking about consensual non-consent, Mistress Tokyo was nodding her head about the negotiation involved. How important is that negotiation, Mistress Tokyo?
It's a cornerstone of any BDSM or kink scene. Absolute cornerstone. Essentially, if you do not negotiate a scene, you will put yourself at very great risk of crossing boundaries into areas where you do not want to play. You should have talked about it. You should have taken your duty of care towards each other, whether you're the dominant or the submissive. So, I mean, basically, like, BDSM is inherently about edge play, but you need to have an idea of where the edge is so that you can push it safely.
Hey, Anna, thanks so much for the call. Mistress Tokyo, what kind of requests have you had that push the edge? What are the more extreme requests you've had from your clients?
I think that the more extreme requests, extreme is quite subjective in my industry, in my profession.
Well, last time when I came to visit you at your dungeon for a story we did on ropes, you told me that you'd had a guy that wanted his balls nailed to the wall. I think that's extreme. I'm just going to say that.
Can I also say that, like, I tied you up when you came to my studio, and for you that was boundary pushing as well. So I think the things that I regard as being extreme obviously are where there is a possibility, great possibility of damaging permanently or even semi-permanently the body of the person who's receiving whatever we're doing, and that can be a ball nailing.
And because we are kind of wrapping up now, I guess just the big thing that you would say is you talked about safe, sane and consensual. If someone's having a fantasy that they're not sure about, it'd be a good idea to speak to people in the community and also maybe to professionals if it is something that's bothering them or upsetting them.
Absolutely. I totally espouse getting professional help. And I'm a professional sex worker, not necessarily from me, from, you know, someone like Dr. Lauren or Tanya Cohens or someone like that. If you really are concerned about your own mental health and stability and personal health.
Dr. Lauren Rosewarn, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. We are wrapping up now. Dr. Lauren Rosewarn wrote the book Part-Time Perverts. I've given it a read. It's a cracker. You can look it up.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Lauren. And Mistress Tokyo, always a pleasure as well. Thank you so much for coming on The Hookup.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If this episode brought up any issues for you, you can call 1-800-RESPECT or Lifeline on 13 11 14.